This is Canada Reads American Style, featuring two friends who love Canada Reads and Canadian literature. Welcome our host Rebecca from Michigan and Tara from Ontario.
Hi everyone, it is Rebecca and Tara, and today is book chat number 17, and it has been almost 2 months since the last time we did a book chat. So I had a really busy April. So I want to start out by asking Tara, what the heck have you been up to for the last couple months?
Oh my gosh, like not a lot, but then at sometimes quite a bit. So I'm going to start with about a month ago, my big thing was I got to see Margaret Atwood speak in person in Hamilton at the beginning of April.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to be a highlight for the year. It was awesome. My oldest, Keegan, and I went. Keegan went without even not having read any Margaret Atwood. Keegan was like, yes, I want to go, as soon as I put it out there. And we had the best time because she's amazing. I don't know. I think she's 70 plus now. Amazing.
She's such a Canadian icon, and not just Canadian, but I mean, she is Canadian, but she's a literary icon. So to see her in person just must be amazing.
Yeah. She was there. Technically, it was to discuss her latest book of short stories, Old Babes in the Woods, right? Which I think came out a while ago anyways, but she just held stage and she spoke about whatever she wanted to. She's a fantastic storyteller. She is funny. We got like a brief history of feminism from Margaret Atwood, which was like pretty flipping amazing. She's fantastic. That was my highlight for April.
But you also just recently went somewhere and saw a play. You might want to mention that.
That's right. So funny, Rebecca, because I'm like, I know I have two things I wanted to mention. There was something, and before we got on, I was like, I can't remember what the second thing is. I'm like, yes. Recently, my husband and I, so just this past weekend, went to Niagara-on-the-Lake, which is about 45 minutes away from where we are, to see a play as part of the Shaw Festival, and it was an Agatha Christie play. And it was pretty fun, very entertaining. My first time seeing an Agatha Christie play. Again, I think she's a genius when it comes to mysteries. Whatever people are doing now in mysteries, she's already done. She set the premise, the base, whatever.
Foundation. The bar.
Bar.
Or set the bar.
She did it all. She did it all. So it was super fun. And it's what was the play? Witness for the Prosecution was the play, which has been made into like a movie a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything about the ending because it's like one of those like shocking endings. And it even comes up on the, you know, it's on the playbill, like keep the secret. Don't let the secret out. So.
Okay. But my question for you though is because that's one of your reading goals is to read Agatha Christie. You haven't read that book before, so now how do you feel about reading it knowing the sort of perhaps surprise ending?
Well, this one was written as a play. So I think it started as a short story. I think it originally was a short story that she then wrote as a play.
Oh, okay.
She also was a prolific playwright. So it is, yeah, I know. So
I didn't know that.
I know. I didn't realize it either until like, I think it was Mike who found this and was like, hey, want to go on? Like, yes. I'm like, so I didn't know. I can't tell you off the top of my head how many plays she's written.
Yeah.
But it was, I do know, because I read this in the playbill before the play started, that she still holds the record. Oh my God. Did she have 3 plays on stage at the same time, which is the most, I think, by any female playwright?
Wow.
Either 2 or 3, but I feel like it's 3. And The Mousetrap, which plays in London, has been playing since 1952 and continues to this day.
Yeah.
So
I guess I knew she was a playwright without really realizing, you know, like putting the ideas together to know that, for crying out loud. Yeah, well, I knew that.
Not the same way. I don't think I realized that, like, I'd heard of Mousetrap, but that was it. And I don't think I realized she was, you know, a novelist and a playwright kind of thing. So
that's so funny. When I was a teenager, I read a ton of plays. Like I went down to this kick at my public library of checking out plays. It's so weird. Yeah.
It's weird for a teenager.
I know. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, we've already established that I was not the norm, perhaps. Okay. So are those the two things you want to announce?
Then? Those are my two big things. What about you?
I have three little things. I will not go into detail, everybody. First of all, I went to Cleveland, Ohio for the eclipse. I met up with some friends from Los Angeles, and we were in the 100% path of totality, had the most amazing time ever. And what was so great, we were at the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, and it was amazing because it wasn't really crowded. The park is so huge. Plus, they had a lot of stuff going on downtown Cleveland that we weren't going to get involved in that mess. And so we were really lucky. We had just this mellow group of people who just when the eclipse happened, instead of, you know, partying and cheering like, you know, they were in a sports stadium, everybody just sort of went, wow, like that. It was just the coolest thing. And I will just say to everyone, I was one of those people that never cared about this stuff, could, you know, had no interest whatsoever. And now I think every human being should at some point be 100% total path of totality, see one in your lifetime because it's just sort of amazing. So even my sister who said like, I said, no, that's what I used to say. And now I'm just like, I'm so thankful I went. Okay. Second thing I did, I got to see author Anne Lamott in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that was really fun because it's really funny. I've only read actually a couple of her books, but I read a lot of her like blog posts and all of that stuff that she writes. And I just love her. I think she's really funny. She lives in Berkeley, California, or I'm not Berkeley. I think it's Marin County, California. She's totally a Northern Californian and she's hilarious and she's insightful and she's so entertaining to see her live. So if you get a chance, do that. She has a new book that just came out. So everybody got a copy of it. And of course I don't have it in front of me and I can't remember the title, but anyway, she has a new book out. And then the last thing I just want to mention, because I do want to close this loop for everybody. Back during Canada Reads, I made a little wager with our good friend Anne from The Bookkeeper in Sarnia, my favorite independent bookstore. And as the winner, I was going to win a bag of ketchup chips because I can't get them in Michigan. I have to go to Canada. And I actually do really like them. I thought at first they sounded disgusting, and now I actually like them. But what Anne did is she bought me 4 bags of chips because her friends, there was no consensus on what was the best one. So she gave me 4 bags of chips, and I am here to say that Miss Vicky's ketchup chips are freaking amazing. So if you are a big ketchup chip fan and have not tried them before, give it a try. And if you are anywhere near the Canadian border, freaking check out Miss Vicky's ketchup chips. Okay, that's it. So
I'm a big Miss Vicky's fan.
When I read about it, it's like kind of an all natural potato chip. So there's not a lot of that chemically junk in it. Mm. So that's, I mean, it was fabulous. But anyway, okay, so that's it for what we've been up to the last 2 months. And what are you currently reading?
Okay. So my currently reading is actually going to be a bit of a cheat because it's also the book I finished most recently. Like I finished it last night around 1 a.m. I didn't stay up late. We had a little bit of thunder and my dog was, I got up with her. And so then I just grabbed my book, which I was okay with reading because I had wanted to finish it before bed, but fell asleep. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I'm going to take opportunity to finish the book. So my currently reading is Cold by Drew Hayden Taylor.
Yes.
My gosh, how much did I enjoy this book? It was like the perfect book, exactly what I need it right now. It is. So Drew Hayden Taylor, he is also very extremely prolific writer of books and plays. I have not read anything by him, though. This is the first of any of his writing that I've read. And this is a Wendigo story that takes place in Toronto. Rebecca, it is very cold. It is in the middle of winter and it is like, it's cold and there is a cold front moving in. I thought of you like right from the beginning because it is just cold and everyone is cold and everyone talks about the cold. And there is a Wendigo on the loose in the city, killing people pretty grotesquely. But at the same time, it's not, if you're a little more sensitive, you don't get the details of how the killings happen. You might just get that there's a chunk of meat somewhere. That sounds gross as I say.
It does.
So that's the whole basis, but there's these three great characters that come together. They don't know each other at the beginning, but they are brought together. Two indigenous men. Actually, there's a lot. There's great characters. Just the characters are great, but the three main characters come together at one point to solve the problem with the Wendigo. Drew Hayden Taylor is very funny. There's a lot of humor in this book that he just kind of slides in. He slides in a lot of, like, I like to call them Easter eggs too. It's like a who's who of indigenous literature. Because one of the characters is an English professor at, well, they don't name it, but it's U of T. They say the top ranked Toronto university. So obviously it's going to be U of T. No shade to the other two, by the way, but just, you know, that was the implication. So one character is a English professor. So there's lots of little like thrown in all like whoever. If you were like, I would like to start reading books by indigenous authors, but I don't know where to start. You could easily pick up this book. Obviously, it would be by an indigenous author, and then just keep a list of every book and author that he mentions and then go from there.
Yeah.
Super fun read.
Yeah, I heard an interview with him, and they even asked him about that, how he always puts, I think he kind of always does that, or maybe it was just in this book, I don't know. The one, I was just looking up, the one I've read by him is Chasing Painted Horses.
Yes.
Yeah, I own that one, and I loved it. I thought that was really
good.
Wonderful
good
story.
Good to know, because I'm going to go back to through his back list now.
Okay, but, you have so many people you're going to go back and do there.
I know. It's like,
it's crazy.
I'm going to have a different like author project every year, but that's fine. That's fine. I have lots of time left.
Yeah. Well, I might not have as much time. I don't know, but
I'm just pretending.
Yeah. Well, it's more like when I think about, you know, Percival Everett having 22 books, and then who was I listening to today? Oh, I was walking and listening to some author interview. Oh gosh, now I can't remember who it was. And they have 22 books in their, you know, list. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how we're going to keep up. So
I know.
Now are you currently reading anything, or you just finished that one and you haven't picked up your next book?
I just finished that and I haven't picked up anything else. So okay. What about you? What are you currently reading?
Well, I actually finished a book this morning. I did the same thing. Last night I was trying to finish a book, and I'll talk about it a little bit later, but I was trying to finish it, couldn't. And I thought, just give it up and just, you're not going to remember what you read the next morning. So I woke up first thing this morning, finished the book, and I did start two different ones today, kind of. The first one is Imagining by Gary Barwin, which you've already read. It's a collection of essays. So I'm kind of starting that one. And then also there's one, I'm going to pronounce it and hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's Autocrator by Emily Whedon. And it came out in April of this year. And it is I don't like to read too much about what a book is about, right? Yeah. So it's hard to explain right off the bat, but basically it's about a male society and the females are called unmales. So it's a little bit, you know, kind of like The Handmaid's Tale, perhaps, I don't know, where the women are breeders. And then the story opens up with one of the main characters saying that she's about to be executed and she's telling her story. Okay. And yeah, and this was one I had received as an ARC from a publisher or a publicist. And I'm actually, at first I was kind of like, it sounds interesting. But when I first started it, I was like, and then I got into it a little bit further. And I was like, okay, now I'm settled in. I think I've got the gist of it.
Yeah.
Because again, I don't like to know too much about it. I like to be a little surprised when I read. So those are the two I'm currently kind of reading.
I like the Gary Barwin book, but I'm interested in the other one too. Sounds good.
Yeah, I think you might like this one because somebody said in the review, I kind of looked a little bit at the reviews. They were saying it's a little bit like in the future, but a little Game of Thrones kind of. Oh. It's like a mix of, it's like a weird mix of things, but it got good, it got good reviews so far. So
interesting.
We'll see. Okay, what have you been reading? What have you read since we chatted last?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it seems like so long ago since we did one of our book chats.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to start off with a collection of short stories. So I read, and this one has not yet been published, but it's Coexistence Stories by Billy Ray Belcourt, published on May 21st, 2024. So I read this, I got an ARC from NetGalley. I've read his previous book and enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. Like I could tell that the writing was beautiful, but there was something missing a little bit for me. But I still wanted to, I knew I wanted to keep reading his stuff. So when this popped up on NetGalley, I'm like, I'm going for this book. Holy smokes. Whatever was missing from that first book for me, he found it, and what it was in this book. So at some point, I did find my quote. I wrote it down. So this is from one of the short stories called Summer Research, in which the character says, I wanted desperately to be an intellectual, but all my curiosities were personal. And that, when I read that, I'm like, that is what had been missing from his previous book that I read. So his book, his writing is very intellectual, academic, well, like beautifully chosen words, like everything's perfect. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was like this distance between me and the writing. And that distance is like gone with the first short story. When the first one I read, I was just, holy smokes. He just like smacked me over the head with it. And I was like, I am in for this collection.
Do you remember the title of the first book that you read of his? If not, we can look it up.
I do not remember because he's written poetry, but it was not his poetry. I feel like it was his first novel.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for you right now. It was A Minor Chorus.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And that was about the main character, I believe, was an academic, like a man who was working on his PhD, who decided to take a break from it and return to his hometown for a, I can't even tell you the reason. I feel like it was just in order to like intellectually think about stuff. That's my image of it kind of thing.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. I remember when you read that.
Yeah. But this one was just, it's a fantastic collection. Like I said, what was missing, he found, and I just, every story I connected with someone or something in the stories.
Are they linked stories or no?
No, although I will say that the collection is bookended. So in the first story, there's a mother, Louise, and the last story is about Louise as well. So the collection is bookended with this one character. The other thing I love, there is one story in here about midway through or a little way past that is a true horror story, like it. Flipping, I want to use like the real F word. It flipping creeped me out. Everything that like scares the shit out of me in a horror story was in this story. And I was not expecting it. Like because nothing else. There is no other horror story. There's no clue, hint that there's a horror story in this collection. Wow. And then you're just reading and you're like, this is a little, I'm like, oh shit. At the end, it is. It was brilliant. Anyways, love this collection. Highly recommend it if you like short stories, even if you don't, because I'm not a huge short story reader myself, but I'm trying to read more, but I loved this collection.
I think, yeah, short stories. I am just finding my way with short stories, how much I love them.
Yeah.
And I just definitely want to read more because, and I love especially linked stories, but I thought too that I can't just always read linked stories. I've got to push myself a little bit and just read a collection because I was just listening to something recently where they were talking about a lot of people think a short story writers are, it's like they're practicing for their one day novel or something. And it's like, no, it is an art form in and of itself. Yeah. I'm always curious though, if short story writers are interested in moving to a longer format. but it really is a skill, an amazing skill.
It really is.
My first one I want to just mention really briefly, but you know, there's so much on Instagram, especially about books about Palestine. And I read this one. It's actually from 2010, but it's interesting to read it now. This was our friend Colleen. This was a book of hers that I read. And it is titled, I Shall Not Hate, A Gaza Doctor's Journey on the Road to Peace and Human Dignity. And I'm going to try and pronounce it's, I think, Izzeldine Abueleish. And he is a doctor who was at that time from Gaza and commuting to Israel every day or 3 or 4 days a week or something. And two of his daughters were killed in an Israeli airstrike. And this was in 2010, I think, approximately, or 20 or 2009, I think they were killed. And then the book was published, I think, in 2010. He lives in Toronto now with his grown children around him. I think they live generally in Canada. And he has won humanitarian awards all over the world. I mean, when you look at his CV, it's just shocking. And his expertise, his specialty is in infertility. It was amazing, especially in the context of what's going on now. So anyway, if you're looking for a really compelling story, it's a heartbreaking read. It's obviously heartbreaking. It's confounding to me because I don't know how he could lose his two daughters this way and really speak of peace and working with Israelis in a way. I just don't know how people do that. It's like, it doesn't matter where you're from. I'm saying any people who lose people in a tragedy in a war setting like that, I don't know how you get past that. And I will also say it's a never-ending story because it's 2024 and it's years later and it's, you know, it's happening again. So yeah. Anyway, highly recommend.
Okay. I'm going to bring a different, very different book. Mm-hmm. It's called A Sweet Sting of Salt by Rose Sutherland. It was just published April 9th, so 2024, so last month. This was, do you remember, I think it was in the early 2000s, maybe late 1990s, there was a movie called The Secret of Roan Anish.
Did you ever see
that one? But the Selkies set in Ireland. I loved that movie. Mm-hmm. And since I've seen that movie, I think I've been waiting for the book that would like kind of match up with it. And I was hoping to find it in this book because it is a book set in, I think it's the 1800s, though I can't be more specific about the time. Might be late 1800s. It might be early 1900s. I cannot remember. I wish. So it was a long time ago in Cape Breton. And this is like a Selkie story, a love story between two women. So I jumped at this because I love an East Coast setting and I love the Selkie legend. I enjoyed this book. I didn't love it like I was hoping to. So there was still something quite missing, but this is Sutherland's debut novel. So it could just be the fact that it's her first book, right? Like, because I will say that I still enjoyed this book. It just wasn't like a 5-star read for me as such. Mm-hmm. But if you enjoy like a historical novel with a little bit of, would it be magic realism, a little bit of a legend, myth, then I would recommend this one. It was a fun read. Suspend disbelief for a little bit. So not just because it's Selkie, but towards the end, something I think happens that to me was more of a, I don't know how to solve this problem, so I'm going to throw this in there. And then that was the only part that really annoyed me about the book. But other than that, I quite enjoyed it.
Now, was this a library book or was this one you bought? I'm just curious.
Oh, no, this one I actually got from NetGalley as well. I got an ARC from NetGalley as well.
Okay. Okie doke. Well, my second book, I'll just briefly mention, since it's been a while since we've chatted, we didn't talk about it. I think we talked about it, I think on our, we did a reading from our shelves video on our YouTube channel. But I just have to mention James you know, Percival Everett, because we both read it and we did a buddy read, which really enhanced it for me because you told me some things that I was like, what the, like, I didn't even consider it. And it was such an obvious thing. It's like, duh. Anyway, so the things I just want to say about it, it is the story of Huckleberry Finn's friend, Jim, who is the enslaved person who tags along with Huck for safety reasons, ultimately. But anyway, it's his story told from his point of view, and it is titled James. And I will say the three things that sort of stand out for me is there is definitely code switching going on, which I love because James talks about how he and the other young people that he's teaching to read and to speak and how to speak in front of, you know, white people, they speak very eloquently, but boy, when they have to play that role when there are white people around. So I love the code switching. That was absolutely fascinating. I loved it. He also really changes that, and I'm going to put it in quotations, that slave narrative, which is what we know in historical fiction in the U.S., right? There's just this idea of how enslaved people are portrayed, and he just completely kicks that crap to the curb. There's nothing about James that is vulnerable. It's just not. And then the third word I would just use is triumphant, because I loved this book. I love Percival Everett, and I cannot wait to read more of his work.
Yeah. It's so funny. As you were talking about that, I realized, like, how lucky are we when I look back at, so we've been reading a long time. You and I have been reading a long time, and that we are like, I feel like we're on this really special place at the moment in the literary world where books are just kind of, there's a real switch being turned on about what the content that's in books, who's writing those books, and whose story's being told. And it's really exciting that I feel like as readers, we're on the cusp of seeing this whole new world opening up in literature. It's very cool.
Yeah. And I think I was again listening to something, which I cannot remember what it was exactly, but they were talking about, you know, the whole, we need diverse books when that whole movement came out. And I think publishers are seeing the demand for other voices way more, because let's face it, it's primarily been white males, white females that have been getting published forever. And I agree with you. That's why I just am not, I was never a big, I always say dead white male. I was never a big reader of dead white males, but now I don't have time. Now there are just too many other voices I want to hear. And this, like I said, this perspective of Everett's, I just like, damn, it's what you want. You know, you just wanted James to have this voice. So I love it.
Yeah. A little bit of vengeance.
Oh, I should have used vengeance as my word. You're right. I loved it.
Vengeance. Okay. My next book is by one of my new favorite authors after only having read two of her books, but it is Nosy Parker by Leslie Crew. Leslie Crew, I first was introduced to her two years ago, maybe, was it, Rebecca?
I think so.
Her book, The Spoon Stealer, was long listed for Canada Reads. I read that. I loved it. So I recently picked up Nosy Parker, which was published in 2022. And my Harriet the Spy loving soul loved this book because it is essentially like a Harriet the Spy. I believe the main character's name is Rosamund, so our Nosy Parker. She's 12 years old in 1969, 67, late 60s, Montreal, around the time of the Expo. Being raised by a single father because her mother died when she was young. And she's a brilliant little fantastic character. And I love Leslie Crew. She writes with such heart. And, you know, like there's always a moment towards the end, I think, here I'm saying always, I've only read two of her books, but I feel like it might be her thing, where she just like kind of like reaches in and like twists your heart. I'm sorry, I'm loving it. I'm all for that moment. I love, if it's done properly, I love an overly sentimental, heart-wrenching moment. Yeah. And you get that. There's great characters, and it's funny, and like this little snippet of Montreal at that period in time. It's just, yeah, loved it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I want to read that one because I loved The Spoon Stealer. Yeah. And I read that long after you, so I really look forward to reading that one. Okay, so my next one, I sort of feel like these are my, here's my Black History book in talking about it in May, but I did get it read, which is The Last Slave Ship, The True Story of How Clotilda Was Found, Her Descendants, and An Extraordinary Reckoning. And this was a book, it was supposed to be the last slave ship to come from Africa to the Americas. And I... The story is really fascinating. There was so much I learned that I didn't know. I will say the writing for me as nonfiction, I love creative nonfiction, but I love solid nonfiction as well. And this didn't really grab me in the same way, but I was not going to quit this book because the story was so interesting. So I can't say, and he's a journalist, but I can't say that I thought his writing was the best, but I could not put this book down. And man, did I learn a lot. And it's a gripping tale because what was the part I love the most is the people, there were 110 people that were brought from Africa, and they even go back to where the ship left. And I mean, he goes into great detail about that and how there's a memorial there now. I can't remember which country in Africa now, but anyway, that was really fascinating. But anyway, the people that came, they were basically split up among a couple of different white plantation owners, one who sort of paid for everything. And he was a real scumbag. His whole family to this day are scumbags because, and I won't go into all the detail, but that's what's partly fascinating is generationally how disgusting that whole family has been. And I, again, read the book and you'll find out why. But the people were enslaved for five years, but then they stayed in the area and they created Africa Town. And it is fascinating how they were in an unincorporated area. So they basically had their own rules and regulations and how they thrived. They had businesses and it was just amazing. So these people survived 5 years of slavery, thrived in this new setting, this new free world, and they were triumphant, but to this day, everything's kind of been lost to progress, right? Eventually a freeway comes down and cuts through the middle of town. I think signage down there now, because I thought, man, I want to go down and see this place. But anyway, it's around Mobile, Alabama. So I can't say it's the best book I've ever read in terms of the writing, but the story is so good that I think you just have to set that part aside and read it anyway. It's really fascinating. And I'll be honest, I didn't even know about the Clotilda. Like, I don't know what I was doing when it was announced they found it, because that was the other thing. After they brought the slaves in, the people in, they sunk it and set it on fire, or set it on fire and sunk it. And this guy who wrote the book is the one that found it through research, which is amazing. That part is also amazing. So
I know when you were reading it, you gave me like little, you sent me a message or something, and I was just like, I will not, I know I'm not going to get around to reading that book, but I'm like, I must know the story. So I'm like, please, like, yeah, tell me the story. And you did. And it is it's truly fascinating.
Yeah. And I barely even touched the surface on what the story is about, all the main characters, the people. It's just absolutely fascinating. And in fact, Zora Neale Hurston wrote a book about I don't know if it was one character in particular or a number of people. And that's a really famous classic book, which now I can't think of what it's called. Barracoon, I think is what it's called. So there's just so much story to this thing. And I just really recommend, even if you just Google it and look it all up, the history of it, but I highly recommend the book for the story.
Okay. My next book is my contribution to my continuing Helen Humphreys project.
Yeah.
So I read her most recent book. So I'm going to show you the cover, Rebecca, even though isn't that pretty? So it's called Ooh. Followed by the Lark.
Yeah.
There's like a beautiful clouds and the lark. It's the story of Henry David Thoreau. I've read none of his. I've never read anything of his.
I haven't either.
I feel like I know the man after reading the book. I meant to do a little more research into how she read or how she wrote the book, because I feel like she had journals of his and went through it. And it's almost like you're getting his journals, but told in narrative, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's his life from a child until his death. She follows him through, and you just get little snippets of him with his family, with his friends. I just loved it. I'll just put it out there. I just loved it. It's beautiful. It's quiet, again, like her books are. They're just quiet books.
You got the book with the better cover, because look, can you see that cover right now that I'm showing you? Can you see it?
No, it's
kind of hard to see.
Yeah. Is it maybe is it probably the American cover, right?
Yeah, maybe
I find
so.
Sometimes our Canadian covers, not to brag,
yeah,
but I don't know what it is, but yeah,
I agree with
Canadian
you.
Covers are often, not always, but often more attractive than the American ones. I'm not.
Yeah, that yeah. one's beautiful.
But I highly recommend it. Yes. I know, I'm like, I've got to read his stuff, but I feel like I have read his stuff because I've read this book. Like, she's done a brilliant job of making him into a person, not just a literary character.
Wow. I haven't even heard of it. But like you said, it just came out. I was just looking. It says February of this year.
Yeah, wow. So very recently. What's his famous book is Walden, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be a large portion of the book when he spends that time there. And it's because that's mostly what I've heard, is that he spent time in this cottage or cabin and wrote this book, and he just stayed there. And the story is that his mother and his sisters just brought him food, and that's how he was able just to write. But she's like, that's in the book, but that's not, he's so much more than just that. And yeah. His sisters and his mother are so much more than just the people who bring him food, which is I feel like we've been fed, is that he wrote this a beautiful piece of work while his female family members just brought him food.
Yeah.
And they were so much more and so much more important to him than just people who provided him food.
Yeah.
You know?
That's fascinating. Okay. I have a huge announcement to make.
Uh-oh.
I feel like we need a massive drum roll or something. I read, it's not labeled as such, but I read the best romance I've read in like 1,000 years. I loved this book so much. Okay. It is Eleanor Curtin. You know, I just realized, I think I keep forgetting to say who the authors are, but everything will be obviously in our show notes and everything. But Eleanor Curtin was written by Lucy E. M. Black, and I read The Brickworks by her last year and mm-hmm. interviewed her. And she and I talked quite a bit offline as well. And then she said, well, I want to send you one of my other books. And I said, okay. So she sent Eleanor Curtin to me. And I thought, okay. And it was on my list, and I kept wanting to read it, but I was being pushed by other things. Oh my God. I'm kind of glad I waited this long to read it. It's a phenomenal story. So basically it is about a young woman it's 1870s Canada. And I think now I'm trying to remember what area it's in. It's in Orange Hill, but I think that's not a real place. I think maybe it's like kind of Ontario-ish maybe, because I think they're kind of not too far from Toronto. But anyway, she comes to Canada from Ireland because her beloved cousin has married this man and is moving to Canada. And she wants to see her cousin. So she secretly sneaks away from her family. And she is a woman of privilege, a young woman of privilege. And she makes her way across the ocean. She ends up in Ontario-ish, I guess. And discovers a very bad situation for her cousin. It's very bad. And so she is now trying to figure out a way to get her to sort of get her cousin to go back to Ireland with her. But in the meantime, she settles in with this amazing community of people. And one of them is Dr. Oh my God, now I totally forgot his name. Like, I can't forget his last name. Dr. something. Dr. Robert something. I can't think of his name. Anyway, Stuart, that's what, because he's Scottish. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I loved this love story so much. It was fabulous. But it's more than that. I mean, it's really a story about, I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to give anything away. Mm-hmm. It was published in 2017. And while I was reading it, I thought, man, this would make a great sequel. There's something that would make a super, super, super sequel. I hope that someday there is a sequel to the book because I loved it so much. And to me, this is like what a romance is. And I said, it reminded me of like growing up, I used to read all those, you know, Scottish and Irish and English romances, mm-hmm. you know, those old books. And I loved them so much when I was young. And I love this book. So the thing about Lucy, when she wrote The Brickworks and Eleanor Curtin, she is a meticulous researcher. And what she does, she puts real life historical things that have happened in her books. And she researches like primary source material, the language, the setting, everything rings so true to the time period. And that was the other thing. As I was reading this book, I felt like I was back in that time period reading a book exactly the way they would have spoken, especially in The Brickworks, same thing with Eleanor Curtin. This woman is a master at, I think, capturing the time period unlike any author I've read that writes historical fiction. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my issues with historical fiction. Sometimes I feel like, well, that's what it sounds like now, but that's not probably how it sounded back then. And I get a little hung up on that sometimes. So Lucy is just a brilliant author. So highly recommend this Canadian, fabulous Canadian author.
Can I ask you a question? I don't know if you'll be able to answer it off the top of your head. Are those two books, so The Brickworks and Eleanor, it's Eleanor, right? Curtin? Mm-hmm. Are they placed in the same time?
Yeah. The Brickworks is like, I think it's more kind of like the 1870s, but kind of goes into the early 1900s okay. as well. So this is her, that's what I'm saying is this is her time period. She has done so much research on Canadian life. And I mean, like she's reading primary source material. And she even said in Eleanor Curtin, some of the events that happened, there was a fire. There's this place called Tinkertown. Those are real places in where she lives in her community that she was able to take those stories and craft them into her book, into her novel. And so that's what I'm saying is she puts her heart and soul into the research and the accurate telling of these historical facts, but in a way that just absolutely captivates you. Yeah. So I haven't loved a book this much in a really long time, I think. I mean, this kind of a book, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Does Lucy have any more books published or is it just the two?
There is a book called Della's Carpet. And it says here, exploring the intergenerational consequences of trauma, including those of a Holocaust survivor and a woman in prison during the Iranian Revolution. It weaves together the overlapping lives of those stepping outside the shadows of their own harrowing histories to make conscious decisions about how they will choose to live while forging new understandings of family forgiveness and reconciliation. And that sounds fabulous. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to read that one. So that's I think that's the only other book. I was thinking it was short story. Oh no, then she does have short stories. The Marzipan Fruit Basket, which is poetry and fiction series. So yeah.
Okay. For my last book, I'm going to end it with a little bit of a horror. Now don't start it with horror. I'm going to end with horror actually. Okay. I'm like really squeezing in a lot of horror lately and it's super fun.
Yeah.
So I read my first T. Kingfisher book and it was A House with Good Bones. Just a fun read. I'd heard of T. Kingfisher a couple of years ago and finally placed a library hold on her most recent book. It is a haunted house book set in southern U.S., you have a racist grandma something hiding in the walls, in the ground, surrounding the house. And our main character who goes home to visit her mother, who lives in, oh yeah, grandma's dead, by the way. Grace's grandma is dead. But her mother now lives in grandma's house. And when she gets home, things are just, when our main character gets home, her mother's a little different and things just aren't right in the house. And that's, oh, and there's vultures, which I love. I love vultures. And so there's like a nice large contingency of vultures that are surrounding our house. Are they evil? Are they keeping watch? Are they guarding? Who knows? I know. I now know. But you know, you don't know. And there may be like a character who's a bit of a witch in the neighborhood. It's a really fun book. A little creepy, but not too creepy. Like there's only maybe one or two scenes when you're like, oh, that's a little creepy. But you can get through it.
Yeah. And I told you too that I just bought you a book when I was in Sarnia by T. Kingfisher.
Yes.
And it is called Thorn Hedge. And I just picked that up because our friend Anne, this was on her staff shelf. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it and she mentioned it, it was a sort of a retelling. It's kind of a fairy tale kind of retelling sort of story. And I had to get that for you. So I can't wait for you to read that one too. So
I'm very excited.
That might be another author you're going to have to go back and read their whole, you know.
It may be. It may be.
Their backlist.
There's no maybe. There is. I'm going back. Yeah.
Okay. And my last book I finished this morning that I loved. So again, this was a book that the publisher reached out and asked if I wanted to read it because I've read other books that they have published. And they said, is this something you'd be interested in? And I said, sure. And it's called Making Up the Gods by Marian Agnew. And it was published in October of last year. Have you read it?
No, it's on my TBR. I want to read it.
This is, you know, it's kind of funny because I would say it's a like, it kind of, when you were talking about the Leslie Crew book, I kind of feel like it's a little Leslie Crew-esque, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it is about Simone, who is a widowed woman who lives in a lives on Lake Superior, and it lives in the house that she and her husband lived in. But then just down the ways, a little way, there is an old rustic camp. She refers to it as camp, but it's a little cabin that her grandfather had built. And so she lives in the house, but then during the summer, she gets the camp ready because it's right literally like on the lake. And so there, she's the main character. And then this woman has a child, a 9-year-old boy, Chen, and she's going to go on a cruise and she needs someone to babysit. And she just does not, Simone just doesn't want anything to do with it. And first immediately says, no, no way. Uh-uh. No, 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 no. And then eventually she agrees to take him in for a weekend. And then it gets extended. And this little 9-year-old boy, so some of the chapters are Simone, and then the other chapters are Chen. And Chen is so adorable. Like, I want to adopt Chen. He's so adorable because at the beginning of his chapters, he writes, he likes to write. So he always labels his topics of his chapter. And it's just really precious. And then there's this character, Martin, who is basically scamming Simone, saying that he is her cousin, and basically trying to get her to sell that property. Mm. And these three characters come together. So the story really is, each chapter is either Simone, Chen, or Martin. And it is about grief and about growth, family, friendship. It's just a really, really lovely story. And I mean, it reads really fast. It's just a really sweet, beautiful story. And I would highly recommend it. It was really good. I mean, the characters are memorable. I should also mention too, there are ghosts. There are ghosts as well.
I like a ghost. not necessarily like in a horror way, but it does. I like a ghost in a story.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and what's interesting is, and I don't want to give anything away, but you know, there is this idea that maybe Simone has mental health issues because there are, she sees or talks to ghosts, but then you start to realize that we all carry ghosts with us. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'll say. I loved it.
Yep. Nice. That's on my list.
Okay. So I think that's about it. And I think we have some really interesting interviews coming up in the very near future that Tara will be doing. And I'm looking forward to that. That's always fun for me to be the listener while she's, you know, doing her interview. I get to be the tech person listening. And I always get, sometimes I always mute myself, obviously, but I'm sitting there going like, wow, or I'm laughing, or I'm really enjoying the interview. So everybody, you'll have a couple of interviews to look forward to coming up.
I'm looking forward to them too. And I want to let everyone know too. So Rebecca and I, after Canada Reads, have started making more of a presence on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. And once a month, usually, so we've done it twice now, we start the series. So usually it's when we're thinking like the last Friday of each month, we're doing it's live, right? We go live?
Yeah, it's live because because we haven't quite figured it out. I think we can pre-record, but I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. So one, watching us at the beginning of each video go, are we live? I don't know if we are. I think we are, is worth it because that's highly entertaining. But two, what we are doing, the series, reading from our shelves, we are highlighting the books that we have read or really enjoyed that are directly from our bookshelves rather than the library or something. So it's really fun we are enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And we get to really highlight books and their beautiful covers that we've enjoyed that maybe don't get to see a lot of light and from other places.
Yeah. And I also bring some picture books with me as well to the thing. Cause I do love my picture books and the last one we recorded, I had the background blurred out because I'm not that bright. So I couldn't show any of the books. It was so funny. It kept blurring in the books too. So I got that. I'll get that worked out.
See, technical glitches. They're fun. And I dressed in with my long brown hair and wore a brown t-shirt. A faux pas, because I looked like just one big lump of potato. It was not, but we're learning. However, we are really enjoying it. So if you enjoy chat, like listening to us chat, but want like a visual of these two middle-aged women, then please join us on YouTube. There's two episodes up right now and we're doing like once a month, just jumping on and chatting and showing off our books.
Sounds good.
Happy reading, everyone.
Thank you for joining us on our bookish journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing Canada Reads American Style wherever you listen. You can connect with the podcast and Rebecca on Instagram at Canada Reads American Style, and with Tara at On a Branch Reads. Until next time, keep reading.